And a special bizarre line. Here's that number, 818-817-0021. I'll be back in a moment. Open lines continue on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, by the way. I hope you have a great weekend, and we'll hit the deck again on Monday. Don't forget Ian Punnett, George Knapp, Saturday and Sunday. To the phones we go. Let's go to the bizarre line. We've got Alexander in Washington, D.C. Hey, I bet everything, the activity must be unbelievable out there, Alexander.
Oh, it's crazy, George. I mean, it's been like that for the past week and a half, 2 weeks now. It's a circus out here right now.
Is it? And it's not getting any warmer out there either, is it?
Oh, no, it's like 5 degrees.
Oh, now. Gosh.
It's crazy. I know you said it was 75 there where you're at.
Yeah, out here in Los Angeles.
70-degree difference. That's funny. But I was calling you this evening because I had a Bigfoot encounter, and I'm telling you, George, the honest goodness truth. Me and my buddies, we actually take an annual trip every year to the Blue Mountains in the Pennsylvania area.
Right.
And we rent a cabin. We do it every year. It's like a guy thing. And this happened, I guess, about a couple months ago. And I've been trying to call and get through to let you know the story, but it's so hard to get through. But anyway, we go up there, and we were in there. We're just kind of, you know, shooting the breeze or whatever, the guys. And the buddy of mine, he goes into the bathroom. So I had to go, too. So I figured, well, I'd go out to the wood line. So.
Now, this place have plumbing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was running water, and so I said, I figured I'd go out to the wood line. So go out to the wood line. It was kind of nicely moonlit night, and go out there. And buddy of mine, he has a German Shepherd. His name is Max, and Max goes out there. I said, oh, he may have to go too. So come on, Max, we run outside. We go out to the wood line. We're standing out there, and all of a sudden, I look down. I see Max's ear stick up. So I'm thinking, well, maybe here's a deer.
He's not unusual for an animal. For a dog, right.
Right. But what he did was he took off back towards the house. So at this point, I'm kind of like, well, let me hurry up and do what I got to do so I can get back into the house.
Yeah, really, quickly.
Right. So then I smell this smell. I know your callers say sometimes they always smell this terrible stench. And first I thought it was a skunk, but I've smelled skunks before. And even in the city in Washington, D.C., you know, we smell skunks or possums or, you know, possums or whatever. So I'm thinking, well, maybe it's a skunk. But then it was, like, so strong. I mean, this is, like, the worst smell I ever smoked in my life. So as I'm turning around, I hear, like, this kind of a grunt, and then I hear, like, some shrubs move. And I turn around, George, and this thing is standing, like, not even arm's length away from me.
Oh,
I have
God.
Clear view of this thing. It was the most horrific thing I've ever seen in my life. This thing was about, I'd have to say, at least 11 and a half to 12 feet tall. It had like a cone-shaped head, but like its forehead was kind of like sloped down a little bit.
Yeah,
his eyes were like deeply sunk into his head to almost like you couldn't even see like the pupils. And his mouth was almost like, I could say almost like ape-like. And he had like no neck and just like just broad, like almost like linebacker-type shoulders. And it was just standing there. I'm looking, and I was frozen. I mean, I could not move at all. And it was like he kind of tilted his head, and he looked. And then it seemed like when I moved to dart back towards the cabin, I turned second, I turned back around, and it was gone. Just that.
So he took off, too?
I took off.
You went one way, he went the other.
I turned around to look and see how far I was from the cabin at first, to see, like, if this thing was to come after me, like, how fast I had to run.
Yeah.
And when I turned around to see if it still was there, it was gone. Just that quick. I didn't hear it take off. I didn't hear it move. It was gone.
Did it look more ape-like than human?
I would have to say so, because its head was kind of cone-shaped, more pointier at the top, and it had like a sloping type. It was almost like an ape. Almost like an ape.
I know you ran out of there, but at any point, did you really feel in danger? Really feel in danger?
I think it was more so because I guess I've never in my life seen anything like that. You know what? It kind of put me in the mind of like a silverback ape, sort of. And no, actually, I didn't feel like I was like threatened or anything. I kind of felt more like, I guess it was more of afraid of me, it seemed like, than I was of it. And that's how I felt. I didn't really, I mean, I guess I was more afraid because I hadn't seen anything and it was so tall.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it is overwhelming, you know what I mean? Like 12, 11, and I would say 11 and a half, 12 feet tall.
So you go back and tell your buddies this story, right?
And they are laughing because they do not believe me. And I tell these guys, I said, look, I know we're here for the week, but you know, we may have to cut this kind of short because this thing is out there stalking, it's looking. You know what I mean? I don't want to be anywhere around this place when it comes back.
Yeah, you're ready to go home.
I'm ready to get out of there. You know what I mean? This thing was just so overwhelming, so large, and just, and this is the honest to the truth. I mean, I looked this thing dead in his face, and like I said, his eyes were just kind of like sunk back into his face where you couldn't even see his pupils almost.
Do you ever have a nightmare with this thing?
No, actually, I haven't. Yeah, I tell people the story all the time. They're like, dude, you're right.
Like, I wish you had your cell phone cam with you or something.
George, I would never have been able to take a picture. I was so frozen. I mean, I think that's why half the time people don't get pictures of these things because, I mean, I guess if you already had a camera set up and you were expecting this thing to come out, maybe so then. But if it just catch you off guard like it did me, there's no way you're going to get a picture.
Were you a Bigfoot believer before you saw this creature?
Oh, and you know what's funny? Like the other day, I was watching something on the History Channel, and they were talking about the Ohio Grassman. I don't know if you're familiar
with
that.
Yeah, oh, sure, absolutely.
And I'm thinking, like, maybe because Pennsylvania being right on the border of Ohio and they're right around the region we were in, I'm thinking, like, maybe it could have been the Grassman post. I don't know if they're the same thing or not, but I'm thinking it could have been the same thing or something because, I mean, this thing looked just like they described this thing, and it just kind of took me back. I'm like, wow, I hope I can get into Coast to Coast and talk to George.
Oh, Alex, that's a great story. But this is the first time I've heard of anybody describing it as 11 feet tall. You know, I've heard 7, 8, 9, but not 11. That's huge. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Jason in Ocala, Florida. Welcome to the show, Jason. Hi.
Hey, George, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Jason.
Well, this is the same Jason that was up at Devil's Lake.
Okay.
There. But I'm back home. What I wanted to talk to you about is when I was young, probably around 9, 10-ish, me and my sister had to share a room because there was remodeling going on in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it was probably, who knows what time it was, but this, like, orb was like glowing down the hallway, and it had came into the room, and when it had entered the room, it just like force had pushed down on her body, on her chest, and we're looking at each other. She had her bed right there, you know, on one side of the room, and I had mine on the other side, and we're looking at each other. We're like, we can't even breathe, you know, and it had moved back out of the room back down the hallway, and then it was like we ran into our parents' room and we're screaming and hollering,
and of course they don't believe you, right?
Huh?
And they don't believe you, right?
Oh no, probably, who knows. But it was really, really, really weird. And I had another dream or out of body experience where same house, same room, but my sister, naturally, she went to her room. I had left that room, went down the hallway, and this person or being, spirit, whatever it could be, he had a gray beard, and he had a staff. And he told me, no, don't go. And so I turned around and went back to my room. You know, I astral planed back to my, you know, to where my body was, I guess.
Took his advice.
Yeah, I did. And it started happening when I was around 15 years old. And I had an episode where it was happening to me again. And like 3 days later after it happened, I was in a water skiing accident. I was skiing behind our boat, and I hit a raft. And I hit that raft real hard. And I had bounced off that, and I'm just laying on my back, and I'm just like,
yeah, just like,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, like, and I felt just like I did when I was in my room. And I was looking up, and I'm in the water, and I'm looking up, and I see this bright light again. And then it disappears, and then it goes away. And I haven't had anything happen like that ever since.
There are signs out there, aren't there? Let's go to Boulder, Colorado. Marcus, good morning.
Hello there.
Oh, what's going on?
Not much, George. How are you doing?
Good. Not bad, Marcus.
So basically, as I said before, it's pretty much an honor. My girlfriend actually turned me on to your show when she moved here from Los Angeles.
Ah, okay.
To be with me in Colorado.
Does she like Colorado?
She's kind of sick now because of the cold.
Yeah, it does get cold, especially when you're used to the weather in L.A.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I lived in Huntington Beach for a year before
okay,
I moved
here, so you know what it's like.
Oh, yeah. Definitely know what it's like. It's good stuff. Well, basically, the story of my life is I am what in the religious communities are known as a prophet, an individual that is able to see people's futures
mm-hmm,
as well as advise people, as well as being given the spiritual gift of being able to see demons. And just from your previous call, the most interesting thing is the most drastic event that I've ever had in my life, and I've had some pretty interesting run-ins with demons, was in an apartment that I lived in Birmingham, Alabama. It was a very bad neighborhood at one point in time.
Okay.
Terrible neighborhood. But it had been reformed. And when I first got into the apartment, it was nice, you know, it was completely remodeled, but the bathroom wasn't, you know, I mean, just had a big mirror on the walls with painted.
Yeah.
And I would have like a very bold vision of a woman being beaten and murdered in that bathroom. And even to the point of having, you know, like the figure actually rake fingernails down through my curtains.
Yeah.
And I believe in most cases, unless it's a poltergeist, it is a demon. So I'm sleeping in my bed one night, and I have this dream. As being a prophet, of course, you would know we have the most weirdest dreams you could ever imagine.
Very vivid.
Oh, very extremely vivid. It takes place in the place that all my dreams take place when it's in a house that's in the middle of a hill on a field. And I walk inside this house, and I walk into a room. It looks just like my room, only the windows are smaller. And I turn around, and there's this creature. And the reason why I said funny with one of the previous callers was the creature in my dream, and there are ones that have been there several times before, stand about 12 foot tall, are gray-bodied, very lanky-looking, roughly cone-shaped head with the face of a monkey, and sharp teeth. And this monkey is holding this giant spoon in his hand. And he turns to me and just says, "Help me fix my mirror." Yeah, I was like, what in the world does this mean? So I woke up from that dream into another dream. And I said, you know, I'm going to open the blinds in my room to let some light in. And I began to hear several voices telling me, "No, you're not going to do it. You're not going to be able to do it." You know, and I reach up for it, and as I reach up for it, I come out of that dream into consciousness. And as I reach up for my blinds, I literally feel 10 hands grab me by my shirt and throw me to the bed. Like, it's not one of those where, like, I get up and kind of drift back. I'm literally flung to the bed, like, with a thud. And I'm like, great. I've been dealing with these things for so long, you know, it doesn't really faze me like it would most people. So I simply said a prayer. Poof, they stop. Open the blinds. Now, here's the kicker. This is where it's very interesting. A couple of days later, I'm in my bathroom brushing my teeth, and I begin to realize that that giant mirror that is on my wall is not actually glued to the wall like most mirrors that size are. So I get my buddy in mine to lift the mirror off the wall, and as we pull the mirror back on the wall is this giant blood spray.
Ugh.
And, yeah, pretty much.
Something happened in that room?
Something happened. I'm a psi vamp as well, so I get a lot of, you know, telepathic emanations from people, especially if it's very tragic.
Well, what you have to find out is if somebody is buried behind the wall. That's what you have to find out. A couple more quick calls before the break. Let's go to Alaska we go, west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Doing great, thanks.
I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller here. I want to talk about phantom lights.
But here's
a little treat for you.
Okay, there you go.
Driver all over the big state.
I love it.
Anyhow, phantom lights on the Dalton Highway. The haul road runs from Fairbanks to Prudhoe Bay, Dead Horse, Alaska. Been trucking up there for 4 years every winter. I didn't say a whole lot about it to too many people, but I overheard conversations from other truck drivers up there. And then after I heard that I'm not the only one, bring it up in conversation to discuss it. There's only one real stop in the middle of this. It's 500 miles in the middle. It's called Coldfoot, 250 miles halfway.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, I'm just trying to summarize this. You can see here up and over mountains, and I mean, it's God's country. It's amazing. It's something, it's a trip of a lifetime. Anyhow, just say you're running at night, you can see 10 miles away on the next mountain or whatever.
And sure, crystal clear.
Yeah, exactly. And on you see a set of headlights coming. Well, this road's pretty narrow in a lot of areas. You want to, you pay attention to this, you're listening to your radios, it's pretty detrimental. So you see these lights coming, you start slowing down. Okay, they're a long ways away, but, I'll give it 10 or 15 minutes. I'll be meeting this northbound truck or whatever it may be. There are no real side roads up here. There's nowhere to go. You're running along the Alyeska pipeline there. They have a few little side roads that you can cut off on, but most of them you see them, the front, beginning to end, they're right there. It's more like just a little short driveway. So there's nowhere to go. Period. And you're trucking down the road and you're waiting on this, say it's a northbound truck, and you're slowing down. Okay, anytime. Pretty soon you just keep going and you never pass a vehicle. There's never anything there, but you see the lights. You see headlights, driving lights, big lights. They're on the road.
And it's not an optical illusion?
No, I'm not the only person that has seen this. I've heard quite a few drivers comment on it. And, there was a group of truckers, the conversation I heard, they had all pulled over beside the road and they were all standing out talking in the middle of the night, and they had pulled over to use the restroom and check their loads. And well, there's a northbound truck coming, so they'll just hang out there and wait. Now, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, no truck ever went by, and there's nowhere to go.
Do these lights, what happened to them? Do they dissipate? Do they go up? What happens?
Well, it's like you're going up and say you're on one hilltop and you look over there and you see them, but they're down in valleys and around corners, and, it's dense wilderness in a lot of these areas, and there's just, you lose sight of them, and then maybe you'll see it pop up on another hill and then they drop back down, stuff like that.
Are they like plasma balls?
No, they're like headlights. I mean, headlights, like light force driving lights. You see six or eight lights on the front of a truck out there in the middle of nowhere. And pretty soon, you're waiting on this truck, and it never comes.
Isn't that strange? What do the guys think they are?
Nobody knows. There's been a lot of deaths up there. I've had friends that have been killed in accidents up there. There's no telling. We don't really know what it is. We call them the phantom lights.
And that is what they very well may be. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with a special tribute to the late Dr. Thomas Van Flandern. In a moment, you will hear our very special tribute, a past interview I did with the late Dr. Thomas Van Flandern, tremendous man who died just a few days ago of colon cancer. Dr. Tom Van Flandern, Ph.D. in astronomy from Yale University. He spent 20 years at the U.S. Naval Observatory. He's the editor of the Meta Research Bulletin, and during the past several years, he's been a research associate at the University of Maryland Physics. Tom organizes the Eclipse Edge expeditions that take you to the best viewing sites for solar eclipse as well. And here he is on Coast to Coast this hour. Hey, Tom, how are you? Welcome back.
Oh, thanks, George. Pleasure to be with you again this evening.
I love this story about Mars, that something hit it. This particular one here, according to their calculations, they say whatever hit Mars was big. What do you think?
Well, they've got a conjecture that it's big because it wiped out an entire hemisphere of the planet. The trouble is they just can't quite make it work when they do computer simulations, and it violates a lot of the observational evidence. I mean, there was no question a big cataclysm that affected Mars, because it's like two separate hemispheres glued together. One half of Mars is saturated with craters, and the other half is smooth and flat. So you have to account for the difference somehow. But we don't think they have the details right yet. In fact, we think it's kind of the opposite of the track that they're presently on.
Did I read this correctly today, Tom, where they thought possibly this object could be about 1,000 miles long when it hit the planet? Now, that seems awfully large to call simply an asteroid.
Yes, you're exactly right about that. Their conjecture is that this happened very early in the solar system when, according to their theory, there were a lot of large objects running around. They had another one hitting the Earth and knocking off the Earth's moon. These are interesting theories, but we know a lot now that rules out these theories. Anyone who knows a little dynamics knows that they just can't be made to work in celestial mechanics. So the new version of the 20-year-old theory today suggests, again, a huge object coming in to hit Mars and knocking off almost a complete hemisphere of the planet to account for the smooth hemisphere with the absence of craters. But I don't know if you can imagine an impact that leaves a planet, half of a planet, flat and smooth, as opposed to one that leaves a big hole in it.
Right. Exactly. Steve Squires, one of those who advanced this ancient impact idea, and of course, he's the lead scientist for the twin Mars rovers that continue to function. If you had a chance to be in a meeting with Steve Squires and he would have presented this ancient impact theory, what would you have said to him, Tom?
Well, I'd point out the long list of evidence that doesn't agree with that idea and direct him to the alternative hypothesis that does account for all of the available evidence on Mars. In their theory, they've got to say the damaged hemisphere was the smooth one and that the cratered hemisphere was normal. They base that on the fact that the moon and lots of other bodies in the solar system are cratered all over, so that looks normal to them. And they actually use crater counts as a way to estimate ages, so that's why they can claim that this all happened 4 billion years ago. But there's another alternative, and one that we proposed almost 2 decades ago ourselves, and that's based on not just the evidence that the Mars has these two separate hemispheres, one cratered and one smooth, but all this other evidence, too, that comes into the picture. The cratered hemisphere is much thicker than the smooth hemisphere. Much of the atmosphere of the planet was lost. There was a shift in the pole location by 90 degrees. The planet, the spin axis basically tipped over. And it has xenon 129 isotopes, which are indicators of a gigantic explosion. That doesn't occur in nature. And on and on, we have a list of over 2 dozen lines of evidence in our website and technical papers. And amazingly enough, there is a coherent theory that accounts for all this. Should I briefly outline?
Absolutely. And but, you know, you both agree that Mars had some kind of explosion. The question is, what and what caused it?
Yes, that's precisely it. So instead of the northern hemisphere being the damaged one, we have the southern hemisphere being the damaged one. And we think that's because there is a strong line of evidence from what's called the fission theory for the origin of the solar system that indicates that Mars is not the original planet that occupied that orbit. There was a gas giant planet originally there. In the original counting system, we thought it was the fifth planet out, so we called it Roman numeral V for 5.
And was Mars a moon to this planet, Tom?
That's exactly right. It had 2 moons, Mars and the one we now call Bellona.
Okay.
and apparently exploded as astronomically and geologically recently as 65 million years ago. Long time ago for us, but...
But not in celestial clocks.
That's right, that's right. That's a heck of a lot younger than 4 billion years, which they're talking about. The interesting thing that happened here at that time was the death of the dinosaurs and 70% of all species on Earth and a huge episode of volcanism and changes in the atmosphere and ocean. Well, that apparently is a side effect of the Earth being damage to the Earth from this big explosion of Planet V.
And would we have been hit by some of the debris from this gaseous-type planet?
Exactly so. We would have, and there are already 15 known large impact craters from that epoch, and the number keeps going up. Year after year, we keep finding more. Talking about on Earth now, and we're perhaps 50 to 100 million miles distant from the explosion when it occurred. You can imagine how damaging that would have been to moons of the planet, which are right there in the face of the explosion. But the interesting thing about an explosion is, because the when the explosion happens, it's just going to blast one side of the moon, and the backside, of course, is protected from the impacts. And that's just what we see with Mars. One side blasted, the other side protected.
Now, what about the asteroid belt? Are those asteroids there or the remnants of something? Might it be from this gaseous-type planet that blew up?
Yes, with a caveat. In the new thinking, planets occur in twin pairs, and they're actually... were two planets that formed the main asteroid belt, this planet V that I just mentioned in the present orbit of Mars, and one that's nicknamed Planet K a little bit further out in the middle of the main asteroid belt that probably exploded about 250 million years ago. So those were responsible for the asteroid belt, the Planet K giving us the carbonaceous-type asteroids, very dark and very much larger on average. And then the explosion of Planet V closer in gave us the inner main asteroid belt, which is more silicaceous or glassy.
If Mars was one of two moons, what happened to the other moon?
The two moons were, with their parent planet gone, continued to orbit each other as they continued to orbit the sun. That situation lasted another 62 million years, and then 3 million years ago, 3.2 million years ago, according to the astronomical evidence, Bellona, which was getting closer and closer to Mars because of tidal forces between the two moons, finally reached a critical point, and it exploded. And that produced a second blast onto the surface of Mars, but not too different from in location from the first one, because Mars and Bellona would have been keeping the same faces toward one another, and the face that was heavier with the thicker crust would have been the one facing Bellona when it exploded. So the result is that moon is gone, and 3.2 million years ago, although that was a much smaller body exploding, we also see traces of things happening here on Earth. That's another geological boundary, and it was the change in the in Earth climate globally from a fairly tropical period to the onset of ice ages that have been occurring ever since.
That's fascinating. Now, Tom, the two moons of Mars now, Deimos, Phobos, where did they come from, or were they always in the area?
They, too, are captured asteroids, there have been lots of theories flown over the years as to how they got captured, because it's very difficult to do that with the dynamics. You need kind of two impulses to get something captured. You can't do it just with a close approach or something. Anything that comes from outside winds up going back out. The explosion theory does it in a very neat way. There's going to be some large fragments from the explosion that go zipping past Mars, grazing right through its atmosphere as they go past. And because they go through the atmosphere, they slow down, and they can drop into temporary orbits around Mars. Now, those guys are going to continue to dip through the atmosphere, and they'll burn up pretty soon. But while they're there, the bigger debris that comes along to, from behind, it's going to smack into some of this, some of these fragments orbiting Mars, and that smack can drop a bigger piece into a permanent orbit because it's well above the atmosphere of Mars when that happens. And indeed, pictures of Phobos have shown that it has this huge impact crater at one end.
When we're going to keep you for phone calls, Tom, when we come back, and I also want to talk about the possibility of life on Mars. This happened so many billions of years ago, according to these scientists, 60-some million years ago, according to you. If your theory's correct, life could have been established on Mars, correct?
That's certainly true, yes. There's plenty of time for that, and these cataclysms probably were instrumental in affecting the evolution of life there, just as the corresponding events happening here on Earth affected life here, killing off the dinosaurs, allowing the ascension of mammals.
What causes these planets to blow up?
There are three theories of planet explosions. The short idea is that as planets evolve and cool, the cores can reach what's called a critical point. The critical point is like the temperature at which temperature and pressure at which water will turn to ice, or another critical point on the high side, it'll water will turn to steam. So you have what's this change of character or phase. If that happens in the core of a planet as it's progressively cooling, then you'll have a sudden change in volume, which can result in the planet either imploding or exploding.
This is fascinating, Tom. It's also somewhat scary. I hope it doesn't happen to good old planet Earth.
Well, we always knew that Earth wasn't immortal, but astronomers were, up to now, had been assuring us that it was good for another 20 billion years or so.
Phoenix Lander's up there on Mars, Tom, scraping for samples. They are pretty sure that they scraped ice. What about the possibilities of past or present life there, and how extensive? What do you think?
Well, the truth is that the Viking landers way back in 1976 had life detection experiments on board, three of them, and they all came back registering positive for life. But that was discounted quickly by, shall we say, the interests of the time on the grounds that there were no organic molecules. Well, since then, Gilbert Levin has shown that the instrument wasn't sensitive enough to detect organic molecules. It couldn't even detect them in an Earth sample with a known organism in it. So, in the meantime, he was able to tighten up the experimental results and show that it really was a life detection experiment. The disappointing thing about Phoenix, for those of us who know what's going on here, is that a generation ago, we sent life detection experiments to Mars, but Phoenix is conspicuously absent in any kind of life detection experiment. They didn't want to risk that happening again, because if they were to look in that soil sample for anything more than water, which is the goal of the mission, to find out if there was water there, if they look for anything more than that, that would undercut the justification for the next six missions up through 2016.
Yeah, which are already planned and budgeted for.
That's right.
Zechariah Sitchin's theories, of course, after he interpreted the Sumerian tablets and texts, that there's this extra planet in the solar system called Nibiru that has an elliptical orbit 3,600 years. What's your take on his theory, Tom?
Well, we've talked about that over the years. The celestial mechanics don't work. A single passage of an object like that through the planetary region drastically changes the orbital period. For example, when Comet Hale-Bopp was on a came in on an orbit with a period of 4,200 years, not all that different from 3,600 years. It went through the solar system, didn't come particularly close to anything, but the planets gave it enough tugs in this direction and that, that when it left, its period had dropped to 2,400 years from 4,200. So you can see how unstable such an orbit would be just from that. Repeated passages through the solar system result in either crashing into something or getting kicked out of the solar system. So it's really not a plausible orbit. If Sitchin's ideas hold any water, I think they'd have to be talking about planets of some other planetary system around some other star and not ours, because the dynamics and the physical evidence just don't work out.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware, but now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, I need to know. Now I can see the light.